Historical commemorations have been a bit fraught recently. There was a bit of drama around the Tuia 250 reenactment of the Endeavour arriving. Yesterday was Columbus Day in the US, marking Christopher Columbus's arrival in the Americas. And again, the conversation about that event got very heated. Well, historians say that when we run these events, we need a good understanding of something called historiography. Professor Charlotte McDonald from Victoria University is here to explain what we mean by that phrase. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Jesse.
I didn't come across this one before. What is historiography?
It's an ugly word, isn't it?
It's not the catchiest word, but no. It's a very significant word in 2019.
It is. And it's an ugly word. But what it really just stands for is the study of history. So how interpretations of historical events and the styles or the format in which they're told change over time.
Yes, and I guess in the, quote, olden days, we would have thought that there was something happened and we're going to tell you exactly what happened and there's no real argument. I guess history has always been about perspectives, but if it's always just one perspective telling the story, then it can seem more objective than it actually is. What have we learnt about the study of history then and the best ways of doing it?
Well, I think it's been quite a long time, if ever, that anybody held that idea that there was one history. Listeners might go back to that old textbook, Our Nation's Story, which is still recalled by some, which I guess is a little bit like that, telling one history as though there is only one. But even as long ago as 1959, 1960, Keith Sinclair was publishing A History of New Zealand, which was a story of human life in Aotearoa. But he was not saying this is the history, it was a history. So suggesting that this was one interpretation, but it wasn't necessarily the only one.
Nonetheless, even if we know that there are different perspectives, there is a danger that we fall into those old traps, isn't there? I mean, for example, Tuia 250 was, for a while, just about the arrival of a ship. And probably that day is remembered very differently by the tangata whenua. It wasn't a story of arrival, it was a story of, in their case, losing the lives of many of their tipuna.
Absolutely. And I think it's important and interesting, and it will go on being debated, what the meaning of those events is now, what actually took place at the time and what was understood. But and I'll give you another example. J.C. Beaglehole, who was a historian at my university and a very distinguished scholar, spent many years doing incredibly detailed and comprehensive work on the Cook voyages and published extensively on them. And his work continues to be, widely used. And while Tupaia, the Polynesian navigator that was on the Endeavour, is in the Beaglehole accounts of the Cook voyages, he doesn't feature very strongly as a person in that wider story. And, of course, now we do know more about Tupaia. We've asked more about who he was. We've thought more about what his part was on the Endeavour and in those really crucial and sometimes tragic events that took place on those early interactions around the coasts. So, in part, it's sort of where we look at historical events, who we see there, and what we might ask about what their part was.
I was struck doing interviews around Tuia 250 at the strength of emotion and the hurt being expressed by a lot of the people talking around that time. Is that a necessary part of talking about history? Do we need to I guess, accept that there will be pain and that it may be difficult for some people to even remember some of these things?
Again, I think people have different relationships to history in terms of events that have happened in the past, and so we don't necessarily expect that the same response or the same feeling will always be present in people's connections with the Napoleonic Wars, let's say, or with the events of the Endeavour and Tuya. You know, that can be different. I guess what we shouldn't assume is that if it's happened in the past, it no longer carries a sense of feeling into the present, because sometimes, and for some people, it does. And I think that's the thing that perhaps in New Zealand we're becoming more widely aware of, that some historical events carry a reach forward.
So what else does historiography teach us? You talked there about looking at the different people involved and paying attention to how much emphasis you're giving to various people playing roles in a historical event. What else is worth bearing in mind as we look at significant commemorations and historical days?
Well, I think it's partly what questions are you asking? So are we just talking about important people regarded at the time as important? Are we just talking about what governments did? Or are we talking more widely about what the experience of ordinary people is? Are we thinking about what's happening in people's homes and private lives, as well as what's often thought about as parliamentary debates? Those things about the big people and the big events as against those more everyday things. And again, on the Tuya story, there's rightly been recognition and acknowledgement of the lives that were lost in that tragic first encounter. But a much longer reaching impact was, of course, through disease that then carried across New Zealand society. And it's much harder to, if you like, bring into a dramatic historical story the spread of germs or disease than it is the impact of muskets and death that happens in a very dramatic and tragic way. And the same is true in the Columbus story, you know, the terrible spread of disease across the Americas following the Columbus voyages had a much deeper and wider impact than did Columbus's voyage alone.
So what would a historiographer tell us to bear in mind as we try and work out the best way of teaching New Zealand history in schools?
Well, many things. It's about where we look, it's about whose story is told, it's about which actors we bring into play, what kind of evidence we're looking at. Are we looking at new forms of evidence? Are we looking at whose stories and recollections are brought to bear on this? You know, if we go back to the treaty, you know, a story that people might think we know so well, Lindsay Bjork was writing in 1914 a book that was entitled The Treaty of Waitangi, How New Zealand Became a British Colony. We would certainly not quite see the treaty exactly bracketed in those ways. Now we'd be asking different questions about that event, and clearly the treaty's come to be a very central part in how we see contemporary New Zealand, and that sparked very different questions about how the treaty was drafted, how it was negotiated, who signed it and where, and what those meanings continue to have. So we'd also be looking at historical archives, manuscripts, collections held in museums, something like the Women's Suffrage Petition of 1893. We now have it in a digitised form. People have done biographies of individuals who signed it. I've just had an honours student complete a wonderful piece of research looking at those who signed it in the Hawke's Bay and Napier area, and she's now produced a map of, if you like, political activism in Hawke's Bay in the 1890s. So that comes with both new questions, but also sources being used with new tools as well. And that's the kind of exciting thing that can be done and will be being done in New Zealand classrooms in the next few years.
Good stuff. Hey, really nice to talk to you, Professor Charlotte McDonald from Victoria University. Appreciate your expertise. Thanks, Charlotte.